Oh, damn. It's on. It's the Young Turks. I've done my drug of choice. So we might have a wild show. I need you to buckle up, okay? Now you might be wondering what my drug of choice is. Well, it's caffeine. And I get quite a buzz off of it. And if I do it too close to showtime, watch out. We're going to talk about drugs in a second. But pot doesn't do half of what caffeine does to me. So, all right, we're going to have fun. Later in the program, we will explain to you how politics works. That's TYT 101, okay? And we're going to really, on three different issues, delve into it and tell you what the reality is. We already have the answer for immigration reform. What will be the answer? You watch the Young Turks, you're going to find out today. People are still going to be talking about it years later. Oh, which way is it going to go? You're going to find out today. And I guarantee you that's how it'll turn out, okay? We're professionals. Look it up in a book, okay? So we'll do that and then we'll have fun. A guy gets arrested and might serve 5 years in prison for calling a politician a potato. It's a real story. We'll bring it to you a little bit later in this hour. Now, before we do anything else, let me give you a quick update on something that you should be attending in January. Whether you're in New Hampshire or not, you need to get to New Hampshire. January 11th to January 24th, okay? Professor Larry Lessig is leading a walk across the state of New Hampshire. Because it wasn't cold enough outside, yes, they're going to walk the entire state of New Hampshire. But it's not they, it's we. I will also be going. I'm going to tell you a little bit later when I'll be attending the march after we finalize it. But 11th is, of course, unfortunately, the anniversary of Aaron Swartz's death. That's when the walk is going to start. The 24th is the anniversary of Granny D's birth. If you don't know Granny D, she was a great champion for campaign finance reform, and she walked all the way across the country for it. So I love this idea. They're doing it in New Hampshire because that's where the presidential primaries are, and for 3 years they're going to walk across New Hampshire, not all 3 years, three times in January, so that when the presidential aspirants go there, aspirants, I think that's what we're going to go with, okay, people who are aspiring to be president. so the good people of New Hampshire ask them over and over again, what are you going to do about campaign finance reform? Also, we're going to pass the Wolfpack bill in New Hampshire. So everybody check that out at NHRebellion, nhrebellion.org, okay? So that's fun for everybody, I think I'll be out there all day, at least one of the days, walking with everybody, so that'll be great too, okay? We'll tell you more about that as we get closer. Okay, now, let's have fun, let's talk about pot. Now, some commentators on TV have decided they're gonna go on a rampage against pot. It is dangerous, it's for fat and lazy people. Now, you think I'm kidding? No. Literal, that's what Nancy Grace said. Let's begin the festivities.
Do you think legalizing pot for recreational use, do you think that's a good idea?
I think it's a horrible idea. And I speak not only after studying it and reading every shred of scientific and research data out there, but after seeing what it does to people on an everyday level. People would drop out of work, they would become lethargic. I mean, come on, ask yourself, do you want your cab driver to be high on pot?
You know, listen, if you do it responsibly, you don't get behind the wheel. You do it in a private, confined space. You do it safely. No harm, no foul.
You mean a private space like your home where you're supposed to be taking care of your children or cooking at a gas stove or lighting a fireplace? You mean that place? Yeah, no. Not a good idea.
Okay.
Look, I don't want, when I'm at work, I don't want my babysitter high on pot. All right? Does anybody? Do you want your children? Do you want your parents, your sister, your brother to be taken care of or driven around by somebody on pot because it's okay in Colorado? You know what? Colorado gets what they ask for.
I know people are screaming at the television agreeing with you and vehemently disagreeing with
you.
Hey,
look, the ones that are disagreeing are lethargic sitting on the sofa eating chips.
Oh, that is a blanket statement,
Nancy Grace. There.
There. She proved it. Oh, science. My bad. Okay. I didn't know she was going to come in with all that evidence. See, if you disagree, I've read all the scientific facts and research papers on this. And if you disagree, you're on a couch right now. I know it. and you're fat, you're obese. I didn't know that smoking pot made you fat. I know it gave you the munchies. I didn't know it made you fat. And lazy, you are lethargic. I read all the scientific papers, and I scream on TV for a living, so I would know. Oh, you're gonna do it at home. Are you crazy? You got gas stoves there. What do you think happens at gas stoves when you're smoking dope on your couch? Boom, explosions, obviously. The one thing she does have a good point on, if you start smoking dope, you drop out of work. Hey, Amir, can you take a shot of Jesus, our director for today? Oh, right, Jesus didn't show up to work today. Oh, that's Amir instead. I don't know, Nancy Grace has a point. God, these people are supposed to be the people telling you on TV what to think. Yeah, I wonder why TV isn't working anymore. Who listens to that? Oh, yeah. Fat, lazy, exploding gas stoves, children melting in the corner like, what did mommy do? Cab drivers, do you want your cab driver smoking pot? Well, I don't want them loaded on vodka either. And both would be illegal no matter what. This goes for argument on television. All right, well, we're not done yet. Here comes Papa Bear. Bill O'Reilly's gonna weigh in.
Let's begin with the left. What is it about the drug culture, the internet culture, that's so compelling for some of them?
Well, I don't think it's compelling, but I think that if you start to arrest their children and give them records and put barriers in front of their futures and their careers, I think people say, wait a second, as you said in the previous segment, this is soft drug use. Why are you arresting and giving this kid a record? Especially minority kids, disproportionately, they're the ones who get
only
arrested.
Only dealers, Juan. There's no, mass arrest of users.
No,
they get a ticket, Juan. It's almost impossible. The records are expunged if they're juveniles.
Oh,
you know what the game is here.
This is not a crime that is actively
pursued by district attorneys. All right. I'm just going to discount that argument, Juan. Mary Kathy.
Okay. Love television, man. Okay, so Juan, they just get tickets. Nobody ever actually gets arrested for a pot use. Really? Really? And what study did you see that in? Okay, now I can show you 100 studies that show you the opposite. In fact, we have over and over again on this show. I can show you over 3,000 people sitting in jail for life on nonviolent offenses, okay? And most of those were for drug offenses. And most of those were possession, okay? So now, you just get a ticket. He makes up stuff all the time. He's unbelievable. And then so Juan Williams got him. There's no question about it. So Juan, I'm going to go ahead and dismiss that argument. Oh, well, okay, my bad. I didn't know you were going to dismiss it. Okay, oh, well, I'll have to try again. So they try again. So now this ham lady is going to come in and try to make decent points. She's also going to be dismissed. The disdain that he shows here. Like, is the woman still talking? I mean, watch for yourself, O'Reilly. You know what he did to Juan Williams was bad. Watch this.
Mary Catherine, you've got a baby. You want that baby to be smoking pot? Is it a he or a she?
Okay.
Is it a he or she?
She, and I would rather she not smoke pot.
When that baby is 13, 14 years old, you want the baby to be smoking pot in moderation, do you?
I would rather not have her smoking weed, and I'm not a huge fan. But look, that doesn't mean it has to be
Mary
illegal,
Catherine?
Though.
Why would you not want your child? Answer my question,
no,
Mary
Catherine. I'm answering the question by saying it doesn't have to be illegal because I can step in and handle things.
So
and
I'm going to say you don't want to answer. You don't want to engage.
Far less likely to be damaging than paternalism in a nanny state.
Mary Catherine, you're babbling. You don't want to engage in this conversation.
No, I'm saying clear words and making an argument to you.
You're babbling. I'll go back to Juan. I asked Mary Catherine why she wouldn't want her 12 or 13-year-old child to use marijuana, whereupon Mary Catherine punted and started to talk about social issues in a general sense. You agree with me that
by the
mass
way,
usage.
Is still
wait,
illegal.
Mary Catherine, wait.
Okay.
All right? So, Juan, you agree with me that a mass usage of a soft drug like marijuana is going to weaken the country, it's going to hurt children.
Oh, how awesomely dismissive was that? Wait, Mary Catherine, wait, you're babbling. Like a woman, okay? Now, and the thing is, put the woman thing aside, put the minority thing, put all that aside, okay? Basically, they got him, man. They were making perfectly good points. And that was making him mad. Could you see it? That whole, "We'll do it live," was like boiling up inside of him. Like, "Play us out. What does that mean, play us out?" Right? And he's like, "You're babbling. You're babbling." Because he was babbling. That's what he does. He does projection. He had no good points. "Do you want your baby to smoke pot?" That was his main point. "Do you want your baby to smoke pot?" "No, I also don't want my baby to have alcohol." "But that doesn't mean I think alcohol should be illegal. I don't want my baby drinking whiskey." Okay. "And at 13 or 14, I don't want him getting loaded up on rum." "That doesn't mean I think that rum should be illegal or pot should be illegal." "You're babbling. You're babbling. Okay, get off. Get off." Or Juan, back to you. Jesus Christ, what the hell is going on? What's going on here, Bill, is that your arguments suck. Tides go in, tides go out. I can explain that. You're the only one who can't. "Do you want your baby smoking pot?" Okay, God, man, that man is monumentally full of shit.
End of this.
All right, I hear you. Bill, sorry about that, okay? All this...
You're gonna get it.
All right, Bill, all right, I hear you, I hear you. I'm gonna get it. Papa Bear is the original goofball, man. Okay. All right, I had too much fun with that story. Let's go forward. Okay, I'm telling you, man, I'm loaded up today. Okay. Okay, now we go to this guy. Yeah, we did it again. You're paying close attention to the show. You'll notice the graphics. All right. Paul Brown is eyeing illegal aliens, so he says. And he's keeping his brown eye on, his eye on them. And he's not going to take it. I'll tell you that about Paul Brown. He's definitely not going to take it. So tell us all about it, Paul.
It only helps the Democrats if we legalize all these illegal aliens in this country who the Democrats want to put on federal welfare programs. And actually, they are on federal welfare programs today. But the Democrats want to make them all basically... dependent upon the federal government so they can continue their radical big government agenda. The only way Georgia is going to change is if we have all these illegal aliens that are here in Georgia, give them the right to vote. And it would be morally wrong. It would be illegal to do so under our current law. Actually, all these illegal aliens are getting federal largesse and taking taxpayers' dollars. And that's the only way that this state is going to become democratic again.
What did he say the illegal aliens were getting? Let me hear that again.
All these illegal aliens are getting federal largesse and...
They're getting large ass? Okay, I don't know. I don't know if that's really the case here. But the guy does seem to be a little bit obsessed with eyeing the aliens. Okay, so look, keep it real. What Paul Brown is really concerned about is not federal largesse that they're getting, not the welfare that he's making up that they're getting, all that stuff. No, he said it right there at the end. He said, that's the only way that Georgia's going to turn Democrat. So this is all about, hey, listen, we know we can't get Latinos to vote for us because we don't like them, man. We don't want to do anything to help them. We got no interest in them. That's not what the Republican Party's about. And if we let them vote... they're gonna vote Democratic. And when they vote Democratic, then I'm gonna be thrown out on my large ass. Okay, and that's what Paul Brown cares most about. And he made the mistake of admitting it at the very end. The rest of it was just crap. He says, under our current law, they're not allowed to vote, so that's why they shouldn't be allowed to vote. I know, that's why we're thinking of changing the law to give them a pathway to citizenship, in which case they would be allowed to vote. Oh, right. Okay. All right. Now, I've got a much more. That was just a fun warm-up appetizer work for you guys. I've got a much bigger immigration story that I'm going to do for you right now. And this will decide it, okay? So in the midst of a story about what's coming up in the immigration debate, I saw what will be the conclusion of that debate. So that's what we get paid the small bucks for here at the Young Turks. is to do political analysis for you guys, and I'm going to explain what the conclusion of this is going to be, and I'm going to explain why. Okay, so first of all, the Republicans are motivated to do some degree of immigration reform because they've been getting their ass handed to them by the Latino vote. And so the more they seem to be against immigrants, the more Latinos vote against them. And that's why the president got about 3/4 of the Latino vote, which helped him to defeat Mitt Romney in 2012. He also got helped significantly in 2008 by that vote. And in every election, the Latinos go more Democratic because of the Republican vitriol against them. So the Republicans want to get rid of this issue and say, well, what are you talking about? We did immigration reform. Now, the reality is, though, they don't want to actually do immigration reform. They don't want more of those Latinos voting. So that's a big problem for them. So whenever you're talking about immigration reform, they say, hey, let's build a bigger wall. But that doesn't really help them with Latinos. So, and they have a secondary problem, which is that big business actually wants those immigrants to come into the country. It's cheap labor. So big business loves that, and big business finances the Republicans. So they're motivated. Now, why are the Democrats motivated to help? Well, first of all, they said they would. I know. For politicians, that's not much of a thing at all. So, and in fact, President Obama has been saying that for 5 years, and he hasn't really done much in 5 years. I know the Republicans would fight him on it, but it would be nice to try. And so now he is trying. Let me show you part of the reason that he's trying. His approval rating among Latinos went from 80% to 55%. Ooh, that slips sliding away. Now, why did it do that? Number one, there has been no immigration reform. Number two, it's because President Obama has been breaking records on deportations. He's already deported 1.9 million people. In that five-year span, that's much larger than what George W. Bush deported. He's breaking records. So he's not pro-immigrants. He's taking the immigrants that are already here and throwing them out at a rate greater than any Republican president. So Latinos are looking around saying, hey, look, I gave you the vote, and I know the Republicans don't like me, but apparently you were just kidding with me. You're throwing us out and breaking up our families at an even greater rate. So President Obama and the Democrats say, no, listen. Okay, I know we were kidding around for 5 years, but we're going to do immigration reform. Okay, so how do they break this deadlock, though? The problem is the Republicans don't want Latinos that come into the country to vote because they think they're going to vote Democratic, and the Democrats want to solve this. So Associated Press explains, some advocates of reform are beginning to rally around an idea to grant immigrants legal status in the U.S. and leave the question of citizenship out of the legislation. In other words, they can work, but not vote. Well, there you have it. It's over. That's what they're going to go with. Okay. Now, I'm going to show you why in a second, right? But as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, okay. Everybody gets a little piece of what they want. The Democrats get to say, hey, listen, helped you, and we, like we told you, we delivered for you, right? The Republicans get to say, yeah, okay, look, let's get past this issue, but at least they don't vote Democratic. And most importantly, the guys in charge, big business, that give to both of those parties, get cheap labor, but then they don't have to worry about those Latinos and other immigrants that came into the country actually becoming citizens, becoming one of us. I don't think so. Now, wait a minute, if the Democrats were tough, they actually wouldn't have to go with this compromise. They just say, hey, listen, we're for pathway to citizenship. Actually, a majority of the country agrees with that. It's a winning issue for us. Sad day for you if you want to vote against it. I'm going to kick your ass in every election going forward. But they're not going to say that. How do I know? Among the people who were for immigration reform is Louis Gutierrez. He's a Democrat of Illinois. And he says, I don't think this is a good idea because citizenship is important. But I don't think it is a big deal breaker either. I saw that and I thought, it's over. Whenever a Democrat says, well, look, it's very important, but not a deal breaker, that means I give up, that's the deal we're gonna make, okay? I remember when President Obama said, public option is really important in healthcare, but not necessarily a deal breaker. And I said, it's over. The public option is gone. And I remember when liberals were like, oh, no, Cenk, you don't know. He said public option is really important. No. Citizenship for immigrants in the country, gone. It's not going to be in the deal. If Gutierrez says it's not in the deal, one of the guys pushing hardest, it's not going to be in the deal, okay? So, well, I've got an idea about another corollary to that that I'll share with you in a second. But another two reasons why this is going to be the deal that we see in the end. Being able to live and work in the U.S., they asked Latinos here, legally without the threat of deportation. Well, it was more important to them, 55 to 35, than citizenship. So it polls well among the people that they're trying to reach. So it's not that citizenship isn't important to them, it is. But the most important thing is, I don't want you to break up my family, I want to be able to stay here and work here. Okay, given those two choices, they say 55 to 35 in that direction. So that problem is solved. And finally, again, the people who actually make the decisions in this country are the Chamber of Commerce. So Randy Johnson from the Chamber says, this idea of doing this compromise where they get to stay, but they're not actually citizens, they're not one of us, quote, that's a seismic shift in the debate. And he says that meaning we like it. Okay, that's exactly the kind of shift that we wanted. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce very much in favor of that compromise. They're also in favor of all of that cheap labor. Now, I knew that we were going to get a deal the minute the Chamber of Commerce came in and told Republicans, we're going to do immigration reform. I'll tell you who runs the Republican Party. 100% the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, big business. So now, in the end, Latinos, congratulations, and others, but mainly Latinos, of course, they make up the lion's share of the immigrants in this country that are undocumented at this point. You will get some sort of papers, and you will get to be, not citizens, not Americans, but our help. Hey, I got an idea. Why don't we give you 3/5 citizenship? Oh, I know. That's a very offensive idea. Whereas this idea, which is the one they're gonna go with, is not offensive at all. We needed cheap labor. We bring them in to be cheap labor. But they don't get to call themselves American. Come on, they're Latinos. Don't hate the messenger. That's the message. You don't believe me? Wait and see. That's exactly what they're gonna pass. All right. Now, somebody was talking to me today and says, you guys look like you're in pretty good position. You guys might really make something of this show. So yeah, we made something of this show. It's kind of number one. So it's the largest online news show. And we didn't get that way by me bullshitting you and then being wrong and over and over again. Now, I'm wrong from time to time. Of course I am, and I tell you, right? But this is how we got you guys to watch, because we do this analysis. You think you're going to see that analysis on TV? You think you're going to see a pundit break that down and then say, yeah, it's over, that's what they're going to do, and then tell you what the reality of that deal is? All right, keep watching. What you're going to run into is Nancy Grace and Bill O'Reilly. That's what you're going to run into. All right, let's move on. The next one is also something you see all over the media, and it drives me crazy. Now, it's a big statement to call something the dumbest talking point ever, but it's driving me crazy, and I think it's earned it. So what is it? Well, let's break it down into two sections. First of all, Bob Corker is going to start the festivities, and he's actually going to use the oldest, dumbest talking point ever. Now, let me explain what this is in context for. Now, they're talking about unemployment extension and should they extend the benefits or not. Now, that's an interesting topic, and we've debated that on the show before. But in the midst of that debate, Bob Corker says, the Democrats aren't doing this to actually extend unemployment. He says, quote, I think everyone understands this first phase is nothing but a political act. Okay, Bob, I'm so tired of that. The oldest, dumbest political talking point is, the Democrats or Republicans are just playing politics with this. But of course they are. You know why? Because they're politicians. That's what they do. That's what they get paid to do. And Bob Corker, you're a senator from Tennessee. I got news for you. You're also playing politics with it. And I don't blame you. That's what you are. So please spare me that nonsense. But that's not what I'm referring to in specific here. He's talking about playing politics because he's saying that this is not about extending unemployment benefits. So Huffington Post explains in this instance. They say other Republicans, including Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, have said Democrats are only trying to distract from the president's rocky rollout of the health care law. Oh, for Christ's sake. Now, this is the 18th time I've seen this. What is the president supposed to do? I had a rocky rollout of the health care law. I'm going to suspend all other policies. I want the whole country to focus on this for time immemorial, okay? I'll be taking the next 3 years off, everybody. Let's just focus on that Rocky rollout, okay? He has an agenda. Of course he's gonna go on with his agenda. Now, every time he brings up something else, minimum wage, trying to distract from that Rocky rollout. And then they print this stuff, and I'm not blaming Huffington Post in this case, but every article takes it seriously. Like, oh, the Republicans made an interesting point. Oh, the president is trying to, they say the president is trying to distract. Well, if you're the president, what are you just supposed to say? Okay, I sit on my hands. Okay, yeah, yeah, we had a bad rollout on that. Ooh, healthcare law, yeah. Okay, well, you know, I'd love to do something about Afghanistan and figure out an exit. Oh, I don't want to distract from the healthcare thing. That was a debacle. I don't want to distract from it. No, of course you have to go on. This is so stupid. And it's so ironic because every time the Republicans say that, what they're trying to do is distract from whatever that issue is. And now they've used it on over a dozen issues. They're trying to distract you from extending unemployment benefits and get you to talk about President Obamacare rollout, which they claim is rocky. It's a way of changing the topic. Oh, we didn't extend unemployment benefits. We look like assholes. But yeah, but the president is trying to distract you from over there. Oh, look, Obamacare. I literally do this with my three-year-old. If I don't want him to look at something, I go, oh, look, a bird, right? Oh, unemployment, we look heartless because we're not extending the benefits. Look, Obamacare rollout. Okay, now, thank God Gene Sperling actually fought back against this. He's the top White House economic advisor, and he had a good suggestion for them. He said, look, if anybody suggests that somehow we want to fight for the minimum wage or extending emergency unemployment for political reasons, as opposed to it being the right thing to do, I have a really good solution. Let's get them done right now in a bipartisan way. I love that. Oh, you don't want me talking about extending unemployment benefits? Great. Let's shake on it. Unemployment benefits extended? Great. Let's talk about Obamacare rollout. Come on. I'll give you a whole day. I'll give you a week to talk about it. Just do the deal. It appears that, ironically, maybe Bob Corker and his friends might be playing politics. Young Turks. I'm back on the Young Turks. In the second hour today, Dennis Rodman's back in North Korea. God help us all. Plus, should you be submissive to your husband? We might have interesting different opinions on that. You know us. You can't really keep up with us. All right. Brandon Atkins writes into hashtag TYT Live. One thing to take away from that Nancy Grace interview, Brooke Baldwin definitely smokes weed. I'm not saying anything, and I agree with her, but there's some chance I got that same. Like, I mean, Nancy, you're not saying smoking weed at home so bad, are you? Right? That gas stumps. All right. TYT Basement writes in, you're killing it with this baby-focused commentary in the last couple of days. Hi, hilarious. Okay, interesting. And finally, Just Ken writes in, O'Reilly should lay off the coke and try some pot. All them eight balls making him really irritable. Okay, now after watching The Wolf of Wall Street, I'm convinced that everybody's always high. Like, we're gonna do a bunch of stories in the second hour about a cop who shot a kid and Michael Bay walking off a set in Las Vegas. Now, anytime anybody's doing anything wrong, I'm like, coke, Quaaludes. Okay, we'll talk more about that in the post game. My reaction to Wolf of Wall Street, etc. Okay, all right, let's go on to Laura Ingraham and the Fox News crew, okay? Now, lately, the Democrats have been starting to talk a little bit about income inequality. Okay, a couple of decades late, but we'll take it. Now, of course, this makes the Republicans and the conservatives very irritable. They're like, ooh, because they love income inequality. So they're going to have to send in their SWAT team to SWAT the issue away. Go ahead, Laura.
Do you think it's an ultimate move just to get off Obamacare? He wants to get people angry at something besides health care?
Yeah, I think so. But the good thing about this is that if Republicans get their act together and actually have a coherent message, they can really swat this away pretty quickly. On the issue of the middle class, Republicans like Jeff Sessions get up on the Senate floor and they say, well, why would we be pushing for immigration amnesty when we know verifiably from the Congressional Budget Office that that will help stagnate wages in the United States further? Why would we do that to the American middle class? We can't do that. We want the American dream first. first for legal immigrants and the American people. Sure. And then when we have that straightened out, we'll work on the other folks who also need help. But right now, we got to focus on this middle class. That's a great Republican message that I think is waiting to be used and exploited.
Oh, I love that last part. That's a way to exploit that message. So did you hear what she just said there? Okay, first of all, of course, the obligatory beginning with, this is a way of distracting from Obamacare, right? So don't look at income inequality. Oh, did you see that Obamacare was rolled out badly, right? So, but then we move on to, oh, there's a great way to swat this away. What you do is you get them to turn against each other. Don't worry about fighting the rich or the fat cats on Wall Street who rigged the rules against you. No, 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 fight against the illegal immigrants. So the guy making $7.25 should fight against the guy who's not even getting paid that wage because he's undocumented. Fight amongst yourselves is a great way to exploit that issue. Hunger Games 101, brought to you by Laura Ingraham. Well, we appreciate that. Now, they have a second tactic that they're going to unveil here. Watch for it.
We're said to hear him rage against the machine, but isn't he the machine here?
Elizabeth. You raise a great point. The railing against Washington 5 years into your administration, it's like newsflash. I know you were in Hawaii for almost 3 weeks, but guess what? You are Washington, okay? You are Washington, D.C. This is your administration. And as far as I can tell, the president has stopped the Keystone Pipeline, 43,000 jobs. He has basically waged a war on coal, which has cost hundreds and thousands of jobs in really struggling communities. All of this happens under his watch and under his guidance, yet it's the Republicans' fault that we have really rich people, really poor people, and a shrinking middle class?
That's great. First of all, again, couple of distractions. Like, I know you were away on vacation in Hawaii. His home state is Hawaii. So, oh yeah, fancy pants Hawaii over there. I know, because Republican presidents never took fancy vacations. And then her solution is, oh, income inequality? Help big energy, big oil, big coal. If you help them, yeah, sure, the guys in the mines, they're not going to get paid anymore. But yeah, sure, that'll help income inequality. Help the Koch brothers. That'll help income inequality. Fox News, why didn't I think of that? But really, the main point they're making in that second clip is, well, you know, you talk a big game, but you didn't do anything to help income inequality, and they're right about that. Obama is the establishment, and he basically did whatever the Republicans wanted him to do. He extended 94% of the revenue rich got to keep from the Bush tax cuts. 94%. He made them permanent. Even Bush couldn't make them permanent. Okay? Did he, you know, wage any kind of campaign for equality of opportunity? No. Are the lobbyists still in charge? Yes. Are they still directing the money to huge corporations with giant tax breaks and money sheltered abroad? Yes. So Obama did everything the Republicans want him to do. And then they turn around and go, well, you see that? Obama's had 5 years. And he didn't do anything about income inequality, so I guess the Republicans must be right. So agreeing with the Republicans all those times, President Obama, how'd that turn out for you? The other day somebody asked me, oh, what do you think about Obama? I mean, he's a leftist, right? What the hell did President Obama do that was in any way leftist? Look, when they say he hasn't done anything about income inequality, that's the most correct thing Fox News has ever said. Do you know that in the economic recovery in the year 2010, the so-called economic recovery, 93% of the gains went to the top 1%? That over the last 5 years, the median wage has decreased over 4%. Meanwhile, in 2013, the stock market went up 25%. Do you know, they always say, oh yeah, you know, your 401k is in the stock market, etc. 80% of the money in the stock market is owned by the top 10%. Okay, so no, here's who President Obama helped. He helped the top 1%. Why? Because those are the people who got him elected, just like with the Republicans. You set up a system where the top 1% fund the elections. Guess who the people who get elected serve? The top 1%. Okay, that's how this game is played, and the whole point of Fox News is to distract you from that. And that's exactly what Laura Ingraham and her SWAT team are brought in to do, to swat away that issue. All right, now, we go to another really interesting, subtle way that they also help people who are basically robbing us blind. So this is a story about the FBI. Now, the FBI has for a long time, of course, been in what? Law enforcement, right? They're the guys who go get the bad guys. They're not the CIA. They're not focused on things that are happening abroad. They're not Department of Homeland Security. They're not the Defense Department. They're the FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigations. They do investigations here at home, right? Well, it's interesting because they recently changed their FBI fact sheet. The old fact sheet said the primary function of the FBI is law enforcement. That makes sense. That's what we grew up with. The new fact sheet says the primary function of the FBI is national security. Now, wait a minute. Department of Homeland Security does national security. Department of Defense does national security. Why is the FBI doing national security? FBI has 100 different crimes to track. It's not just about national security. Okay, so now there's an excellent article in Foreign Policy that explains why they do this. They talked to national security lawyer Kel McClanahan, and he made a great point. He said, I think they're trying to rebrand. So many good things happen to your agency when you tie it to national security. He goes on to explain a little bit more in detail. He says, if you tie yourself to national security, you get funding, and you get exemptions on disclosure cases. You get all the wonderful arguments about how if you don't get your way, buildings will blow up and the country will be less safe. Bingo. So, oh, you got an issue with a disclosure case, you're having trouble. No, national security, step aside. I don't have to disclose anything to you, etc. Okay? Are you giving me trouble? National security, if you don't give me what I want, the terrorists are going to win, right? And will you get more money that way internally? You betcha, okay? That's where the money's flowing in buckets. But that's not the only reason for this rebranding and restructuring of the FBI. Now, let me explain. First of all, between 2001 and 2009, the FBI doubled the amount of agents dedicated to counterterrorism. Now, if you looked at that fact by itself, you might think, hey, wait a minute, that's not such a bad thing. You know, doing counterterrorism, great, we doubled our efforts. But they didn't double the FBI's budget. No, you see, they had to shift things around and make other priorities less important. So FBI agent Brad Garrett explains, violent crime, property crime, and white-collar crime, all those things had reductions in the number of people available to investigate them. So if there was some violent crime around you, sad day, we moved it to counterterrorism, okay? Now, how many terror plots are there in the country? Not that many, but that's where the big bucks are. So who cares if you got crime in your area? In fact, Robert Hawley's a special agent near Chicago, where they have a significant amount of violent crime. He says, if I put more resources in violent crime, I'd have to take away from other things, like counterterrorism. So he doesn't. So the FBI puts less resources into violent crime in Chicago. And look, there's 100 different reasons for it, but this is among them. And voila, we have more violent crime. Now, there's a lot of different factors. But when it comes to white-collar crime, the FBI is absolutely critical. They're one of the fewer organizations in the country that have enough resources to be able to go after big banks and huge financial institutions with huge resources who can lawyer up and fight back against you. Well, luckily, back in 2000, we had about 10,000 cases the FBI was investigating, white-collar crime investigations. Uh-oh. Well, with a new restructuring in the Bush years after 9/11, well, you look at that, in 2005, only 3,500 cases. If you're counting at home, that's about a two-thirds reduction. Oh, golly gee, are they doing white-collar crime and all that financial fraud? Oh, oops, we didn't have the FBI guys to be able to investigate it. What could we do? Seattle Post-Intelligencer did a great report about this back in 2007. Had the FBI continued investigating financial crimes at the same rate as it had been before the terror attacks, about 2,000 more white-collar criminals would be behind bars. All those white-collar criminals, free to go. And that was in 2007. What happened after 2007? Oh, right, the biggest financial collapse in American history next to the Great Depression. And why? Because we had the biggest financial fraud in American history. And those guys, right, also free to go. I guess you hit a couple birds with that one stone when all of a sudden the FBI is not about law enforcement anymore. It's about national security. Part of the reason for that is because they don't want to enforce the law. The robbers are in charge, my friends. They own Washington, and now they're defunding all of their enemies. Whether it's the SEC, we've done stories about that before, whether it's all the regulatory bodies, when you hear them railing it, oh, regulation, regulation, what they're saying is, oh, don't regulate Wall Street, because if there aren't cops on the beat, well, the robbers are very, very happy about that. And now they've even gutted the FBI looking into white-collar crime. Gee, I wonder how we got income inequality. Gee, I wonder how all the bankers got away with all that financial fraud and there was no major prosecutions after that epic collapse on Wall Street. This is how it happened. All right, let's come back and I'll give you some lighter stories, including a man, are you kidding me? Look at this. The first Pastafarian ever taking public office in America. I'll tell you all about it. All right, back on a Young Turks. Let me read some hashtag TYT lives for you. I like that we're doing this in the first hour now. Shermalis writes in, pass the Red Bull, Cenk. And he says, Cenk's on fire. Curious, though, if Cenk could enter the no-spin zone a la Jon Stewart with Baba O'Reilly, would he? Of course. The damage that could be done. we'd have to have the world's largest pool on when he cuts my mic. All right, Prince of Buns writes in, but this is the land of opportunity. The working poor can become billionaires, so don't tax the 1% too much. Hashtag poor reps buy this crap. Okay, and then finally, Chago Fun says, seriously, when are you guys going to stop covering Fox News? What an effing waste of time, especially for hashtag TYT live viewers. Okay, so that's an interesting criticism, right? And don't think that I don't know you're secretly Dave Kohler. So yes, we have that criticism internally as well. Look, the reason we covered it is so we can beat that bullshit back, okay? And now you can say, oh, you don't have to, but we do have to, right? Now, all those talking points that, for example, Laura Ingraham gave in that Fox News segment that we just covered, that stuff is the toxic ooze, toxic sludge that oozes through the mainstream media. They started over there and it just flows on downhill. And then you hear those same talking points, distracting from Obamacare. Oh, Obama didn't do anything about it. Oh, it's why? It's because, oh, he didn't create enough coal jobs. He didn't create enough Keystone pipeline jobs, etc. And that shit sticks. So we got to beat it back before it sticks. In fact, what I understand is...
What to do? You take them out of the office and hit them with a stick a couple times. They will do.
Okay, so that's your explanation. Now, let's move forward to new fun stories. This one's not so fun for Zambia. So sometimes we get frustrated here in America with our government. Well, at least we're not in Zambia. Okay. Now, look, different administrations in Zambia, of course, have different results. And the current administration of President Michael Sata is creating some issues. He's already had Never Sekwula Mumba of the Movement for the Multi-Party Democracy questioned by police after he called the president a liar. He's already brought up former ex-president Rupia Banda on numerous corruption charges. Now, the merits of those charges, I don't know. You know, they could have merit, they might not. But the reason I bring you this story is because now he's gone after yet another political opponent, the head of the Alliance for a Better Zambia, Frank Bawalya, and he's done it in an interesting and curious way. Apparently, in a radio interview, Frank Bawalya called the president a chumbu musholowa. How many times I'd want to call the president that, you know what I'm saying? Okay, so what does that mean? Apparently, it means, quote, a sweet potato that breaks when it is bent. Doesn't sound so bad, okay? Well, so what does it mean in the local, you know, language? What is it an idiom for? They explain from AFP, they say that it's used to describe someone who does not heed advice. Wow. That does sound really bad. They arrested him. And he now faces a 5-year jail sentence. Now, we're not sure that he's going to get it. He hasn't gotten it yet. But he could get up to 5 years for calling the president a potato. I can guarantee you I've called the president far worse things. Okay. Whether it was President Obama or President Bush or many other presidents across the world. So, yes, things get dark here in America from time to time. And we do have consequences to our actions throughout the world. And that's why we cover the U.S. government more than any other government, other than the fact that, of course, we live here and we've got to live with it, right? But yes, there are governments across the world that sometimes make us go, well, at least we can call our president a potato and still be on air. Damn. Okay. So now we move forward to back to the U.S. and our interesting situations here. I want to congratulate all of the members of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster because you are now represented in government. We have what may be the first openly Pastafarian sworn into office. He's in fact a Pastafarian minister at that. His name is Christopher Schaefer. He's on the Pomfret, New York Town Council. And in fact, we have a picture of him being sworn in. And if it looks like he's wearing a construction hat to his swearing in, no, he's not. He's wearing a colander. So, yeah, that would be the thing that you make spaghetti in. This guy's got a set on him. Okay. Slash not running for higher office. But I love him for it. Love it. He's like, look, you get to do goofy things like swear on the Bible, the same Bible that talks about seven-headed dragons. I didn't bring a seven-headed dragon in, okay? You know, you talk about how your guy is up in the sky. Well, my guy has noodly appendages in the sky as well, okay? So you got a sky god, I got a sky god. Obviously, he's trying to point out the absurdity of religion, as I would imagine most of the members of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. But I love the fact that he took the extra step and said, if that's how you're going to get sworn in, this is how I'm going to get sworn in. So that's an American fighting for his principles there. And I love it. God bless you, Christopher Schaefer, first ever Pastafarian office holder. Welcome aboard. All right, that's all. That's all I got on the Pastafarian. Bless his heart. Okay, now, we go back abroad for more goofiness. So, an interesting thing recently happened. Paul Hellyer was interviewed. He happens to be a former defense minister of Canada. Now, it was back in the 1960s, but obviously an incredibly important position. And it turns out he not only believes that there are aliens, but that we have plans for them, and they come to visit us fairly regularly, and that there are many different types of aliens. I didn't know that. Interesting. So he explains. Look, we have a long history of UFOs, and of course, there's been more activity in the last few decades, of course, since we invented the atomic bomb. They're very concerned about that and the fact that we might use it again. Oh, I see. So the Defense Minister of Canada apparently knows their intentions as well. I don't know how they communicated that to him, but he was a defense minister. Maybe they sent out a satellite back in the 60s and had some conversations like, you know. Oh, okay, and what do you think, Mr. Alien? Oh, okay, so you're concerned about our atomic bombs. I got you. Okay. Now, look, do I think that there is life forms outside of this planet? I would be shocked if there weren't, right? Why? It's a big, big universe. You think, I mean, what hubris to think, no. This tiny little planet here in the middle of our universe, only one. Only one where life came about. That seems, well, improbable. Now, did they actually arrive here? Okay, if they did and they communicated with this guy, I'd be a little surprised, right? But I have no opinion on that. What I do have an opinion on is the mental well-being of Paul Hellyer. Because he goes on to explain that there are, in fact, 80 different species. Seems like a very specific number. They regularly visit Earth, and he, in fact, has some names for them. They're apparently known as the short grays, the Nordic blondes, I didn't know that aliens were Nordic. That's interesting. And the tall whites. Now, I know this is just a way of referring to them, but he gets more specific. He says, he, quote, he claimed the tall whites are working with the U.S. Air Force in Nevada. Well, of course they are. And that two women from that species had dressed as nuns and went to Las Vegas to shop. Now, look, to give the guy credit, if aliens did land, they would probably go to Vegas first. They'd be like, that's for us. And besides which, then, we wouldn't get to find out about it, because what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Okay. Anyway, now, my favorite part of all this, I don't know why, but I obsessed about this part, is that he says that they come from Venus, Mars, and Saturn's moon, Andromeda. So look, could they come from a faraway universe that we're unfamiliar with? Yes, I think they could, actually. Could they come from Mars? No. They're not hiding underneath Mars's surface, okay? Because Mars, we can actually see. We can see Venus. There's no, like, Nordic blondes and tall whites over there. It's amazing to me that a guy like this was the defense minister of a major country. Just because somebody is in a position of authority doesn't mean that they're mentally sane, okay? So just keep that in mind. And it isn't, I know they did a lot of drugs in the 1960s, okay? But it isn't just about the 1960s, okay? So when you see these guys, you think they're all like, oh, no, he's in a position of authority, so he must have things figured out. A lot of them are cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Remember this guy the next time you trust someone in authority. Okay. All right, now. Oh, all right. Well, I got one story, one more. All right, let's have fun with one last story, okay? I enjoyed this guy. Okay. So Robert Vick decides he's going to break out of a minimum security facility in Lexington. He's serving time for burglary and criminal possession of a forged instrument. He was serving a 6-year sentence, and he decides, you know what, this Blackburn Correctional Center, it's not for me, it's for other people. So he breaks out, and the problem is the wind chill in Kentucky at that time is about, 20 below zero. So now he's got his prison-issued khaki pants, a shirt, and a jacket. That didn't quite do it for him. Okay, so he's on the run, damn, I'm cold. So, I love this part of the story where the Associated Press reports that he turned himself in at a motel. Quote, Vic was checked out by paramedics and returned to Blackburn Correctional Complex. He was treated for hypothermia and then immediately returned to prison, where he basically said, thanks God. He's like, oh my God, I don't know what I was thinking, man. It's cold out there. And I love where he turned himself in. He turned himself at the Sunset Motel and Restaurant. Apparently that was the sunset of his escape. He's like, they got a fireplace. I'm going in there. And he comes in and he tells the guy running the place, who's like, who is this guy? He's like, I surrender. He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, no, dude, just get me back to the prison. I don't know if that says something about our prisons, something about Robert Vick over here, or something about perhaps global warming. Yeah. You know what Fox News would say? So cold in Kentucky, prisoners are turning themselves back in. Global warming, Al Gore? I don't think so. Got cold somewhere. All right, that's it. I'm out of time. I'd love to tell you more. Tomorrow, probably about Robert Gates' revelations about President Obama and Joe Biden. Go!